What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and gifted saxophonist. He has a very melodic and temporary sound and has radio play on 115 stations worldwide and continues to peak and hold respectable positions on various radio and smooth jazz indie charts. Please put your hands together and welcome smooth jazz saxophonist D. Lucas. What's happening, D?
Hey, Gab, what's going on, man? It's a pleasure to be.
Oh, man, a pleasure's all mine, man. It's truly an honor, man, to get a chance to chop it up with you, you know, and what you do as a musician, man. It's just truly phenomenal, man. I love your sound.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Of course, there's a lot of hard work in it, but it's always rewarding on the end.
Well, D, man, first off, I want to talk a couple about some music tracks that I heard of yours, man. I had a chance to check out your website. And one of the tracks that immediately caught my attention was Nothing I Do.
Okay.
Man, that's a solid R&B foundation track mixed in with the smooth jazz soprano sax that you're playing on there, man. It's just the combination just works together on that track.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. That song was it was produced by a couple of producers out of the Gary, Indiana area, John Roberts and... Tracy, I can't think of her name. I haven't talked to her in so long. But anyway, they both live in Atlanta now. And they had provided me the track, and I basically wanted to put a nice line to it. And it was a nice story talking about no matter what you do for someone that you love one, it's still not enough. So the vibe was there, and that's just the way it came across.
Wow. Now, if you had to really describe your sound as a musician, I mean, I think everybody has a sonic signature in what they do when they compose and when they're, you know, giving us that audio deliverance, man. What would you think is a combination of? Because I hear a lot of different elements in there and a lot of influences are really ringing my bells when I'm hearing it. How would you describe the D. Lucas sound?
It's definitely contemporary. I would say it's not so much smooth jazz because... a lot of things that I'm doing melodically is definitely not down the middle, I should say. It's smooth where the overall sound is soothing, but I would say a lot of the things that we're doing underneath the music itself, mm-hmm. it gives it more of an edge, I should say.
Right.
There's some edges in the music. Melodic, it's something that's not as traditional, and some of the melodies that I'm doing or some of the melodic lines are not as predictable. It's something that's off the beaten path a little bit, and that's what I really appreciate because it does give me a unique sound. I think ultimately all artists always want to have their unique sound, so if you play a record in 3 seconds, oh, that's D. Lucas, oh, that's Glover, that's what you want, that's a compliment, that's the ultimate compliment, so... That's definitely the sound that I'm definitely going after. It's more of a unique melodic sound that's off the beaten path a little bit.
No, I definitely agree with you, man. One of the your tone to me, it reminds me a lot of Grover Washington when I listen to a lot of your chops and stuff, man.
Okay, well, I appreciate you. that's a hard act to follow right there.
Right, but you know what I mean? It's just, you know, again, I listen to a lot of dynamics, you know, for brass players, man, and, you know, just the way you guys deliver, you guys have your own touch. You know, that's just one of the styles that I thought of when I heard it. I was like, wow, man, that's a lot of Grover Washington right there.
I appreciate it. Definitely appreciate it.
You know, how did you start into the music business, D? I mean, were you a trained musician, or did you kind of just pick it up along the way?
Well, you know, Spud, let me tell you, when I say I have a story to tell, I have a true story to tell. I am definitely not the typical musician that started when he was six, technically trained or theoretically trained, going through his adolescent days. I did not pick up the saxophone until I was 28 years old. I've always wanted to play, but I was more into sports growing up. I couldn't do both because I had choices. I mean, either you do the band thing or you do sports, and I chose sports growing up. But it was always in the back of my mind. At some point in time, I want to learn music, and I want to take it somewhere. Got through college, still didn't do it. Got out of college, moved to Atlanta, and that's where I had a dormant period where I was just working, doing nothing else. So I picked up the horn. I bought my first horn at 28, and I just used to listen to a lot of records that I've listened over the years, And then in addition to going out to the clubs and listening to some of the local cats play, it just gave me a hunger to do more and learn more. So it came from that and also practicing every day, for hours, and just being hungry. Right. And a lot of stuff started falling into place. It's definitely a heartfelt. A lot of stuff that I do is definitely heartfelt. There's a lot of trial and error, of course, because you're trying different things on your own. So that's where I am.
Right. Yeah. No, it's cool, man. You know, I play by ear. I've been playing since I was a kid. But, you know, having the advantages of, you know, perfect pitch and be able to pick up songs and play covers and, you know, like you say, man, playing hours and practicing hours on your chops, your runs, you know, just different ways to arrange different melodies and things. I mean, that takes time and it takes years to develop where you become a seasoned musician. You know what I mean? Where you're able to be able to jam and groove with anybody on stage and stuff, man. So, yeah, no, I
absolutely
take my hat off to you, man, because when I hear you play, man, you definitely sound like you're trained and seasoned, definitely.
Well, I appreciate it, and that is definitely, when I hear that, that is something that keeps me going musically, because I do run into periods where I kind of doubt myself in terms of, well, am I really delivering the music the way it should or the way the audience can appreciate it? So when I hear these compliments or when I hear people buy my record, and mind you now, these are not my relatives that just pepping me. These are people that don't know me. So when I get the compliments from people that I don't know, then that gives me the go-ahead or the approval to continue to do what I'm doing.
Nice. Now, how many CDs have you released on your own?
This is my current CD, Standing Room Only, marks my third CD as a solo artist. And they're all on my label that I created, More Better Recording.
Nice.
So my first record was Remembrance, which was a tribute to George Howard in 2004. And in 2007, I came back with Something to Ride To, which has the Nothing That I Do track on there. And by the way, the vocals, I mean, she's going to kill me. Her name is not Tracy, it's Terry Carroll. Okay. And then the third record, Standing Room Only, which is currently doing very well on the charts, and as we play live, it's been very receptive.
Nice. Now, Dee, I want to talk a little bit about compositions. You know, I just like asking different musicians and composers their methods of putting a song together for themselves and maybe stepping outside the box and maybe producing or writing for somebody else. Do you have a team of writers and producers and session players that you work with, or is this all you on the CD?
No. I have a team of producers. A lot of the guys that produce are the guys that I've played with once, you know, at some point in time live. And by being in Atlanta, it's a pool of musicians here that are producers. And we tend to help each other. And since they're so talented, we try to lend each other helping hands along what we're doing. So it's more like a trade-off thing. So what I like to do, and this is just me, I like to have a team of producers, and I say that because I like to have different flavors and different ideas coming from more than one mind. I have the philosophy that I don't want to just do all my music because I may find myself writing pretty much the same or having something to say. I may run out of something to say. Whereas if you have an idea, then you may have that other producer that can give you that extra edge, or that can really give you that that bump in music or that advantage or some more creative juices that you're trying to get out but just can't get it out. So,
right.
And I think on the first record, Kerry Davis, he was the keyboard player that played with me for many, many years, and he still plays with me. He basically did all the production of that first track, CD. And then the second record, I started to stretch out a little bit where I added maybe 4 to 5 producers to the project. And it shows because it has a lot of different styles on that project. And on the third CD, the current CD, I have, I want to say 6 producers. And they range from smooth, fusion, neo-soul to urban hip-hop. And that's what I want, because I want to be able to deliver multiple or different styles of music to different audiences.
I agree with you, man. Being a music producer myself, sometimes when I'm working on a certain project, you know, I get with a crew and, you know, because they know me and, you know, they want me to do a lot of the tracks, certain flavors and certain styles that I know they're trying to capture on their CD, I definitely recommend working with other producers just to give it that different flair.
Absolutely.
You know, I think everybody would agree with me as a producer, you know, everybody has a comfort zone and, you know, we're always working at 100% of our talents and that's our style and that's what we should be approached for coming on a project. You know what I mean? But if I'm a country producer, the last thing I want to do is step on a hip-hop track.
You know? I hear you. That's real right there.
Right. You know, so we got to step outside our pride and maybe our talent, say, you know what, man, I'm not the best for this project. Let me, you know, put you on to somebody else who I know is going to be able to tackle this at 100%. You know, because I don't want to just get away with my talent, you know what I mean, and perform maybe 70 to 80% when I know someone could do it at 100%. So.
Absolutely. In other words, what you're saying, it's enough to go around.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, what stood out to me, a lot of the tracks I did hear, man, your mixes are just phenomenal, man. Are there any certain mic pre's and mics that you're using for your soprano sax?
Well, here again, it's more of a growth thing. If you're listening to the one on Standing, Something to Ride to, I did the in-audio interface.
Okay.
I did one mic. I used the tube mic, the groove tube. Yeah, I used the groove tube, and I interfaced it with the in-audio going into a PC workstation. You know, on my first record I did, believe it or not, I did the Roland 1680. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we were able to make it happen on that, but it was more of a growth thing where your budget get bigger, you can use more facility. Where on Something to Ride to and Standing Room Only, especially Standing Room Only, I used two mics this time. I used the groove tube, and I used the Samson CL7 condenser mic. And the way I mic my saxophone, I put the condenser mic on near the bell, not so much on it, but away from it. And then I used the groove tube as an overall sound near my left finger on the pad, maybe I'll say 10 inches away.
Okay.
But it gave it more of a warm sound. You know, the groove tube is going to give a warm sound anyway because it's a tube mic.
Right.
But I ran it, of course, through the in-audio, and the workstation that I use, the software, is Cubase.
Oh.
And what I do at home, I have, of course, I have a studio where I do a lot of my pre-production with, do a lot of my tracking for the saxophone, or if I had any instruments like a trumpet or vocals, I could do all that from my studio. But for drums or some other instrumentation, I take it to another studio or producer that has the facility to do so. But the phase that the philosophy that we use, we do a lot of flying. Well, we fly the tracks back and forth.
Right.
Of course, you know, I record my track, then I fly my saxophone track to that producer over his studio through email or what have you. You send it, and he dump it down on his, and he can do all the post-production. And then when he's done, he flies back to me.
You know what, man? I've been waiting for this for at least 10, 15 years where I would be able to be compatible with a lot of other studios. You know, technology is advanced now. I mean, because I started recording and tracking late 80s up until current. Back then, there was no DAWs. You know, DAW system weren't existing. Everything was still analog recording. And when DAW got into the game, it was either Pro Tools, you know, or you were doing Cubase or Logic Pro. But now, man, it's just the transition between the formats are flawless. And, man, you know, you have to be in the same state to work with somebody nowadays, you know.
No, absolutely. I mean, digital zero means digital zero, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a matter of you just getting a good recording, fly to the person, and make sure it's dumped down real good. So, and that's it.
All right. Now, I got to ask you, D, man, finding that zone for creativity, I mean, there's so many ways that I feel that we really get into the zone. Do you find it being on stage where you're gravitating off the energy of the audience and your band members, or is it in the studio where it's a little bit more structured and you can really take your time with your compositions?
It's a different place and time. When I am live, when I perform live, it's spontaneous. It's a different energy. Because you are feeding with the crowd, because your whole objective when you're performing, you want to connect with the crowd. And if the crowd is very responsive, then you're going to respond back in a certain way. Whereas studio work or recording sessions, it's planned. There's some serious thought. It could be something that's going on 2 weeks ago, and it's still lingering in your thoughts, and you want to lay it down. And that's, it comes across different. And you said it, you hit it right on the head. Recording and studio set is well thought out. It's more of a plan attack. Whereas you performing live, you may want to do it this way, but once you get on stage, you may go somewhere else with it.
Definitely. Now, I agree with you, man. You know, I always, when I'm trying to compose and, you know, I'm writing for people or for myself, you know, mm-hmm. I want a track that's going to be able to translate well on stage to other band members. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where it's, you know, I don't have too many artificial sounds where I have maybe 8-9 keyboards on stage with me, man. But, you know, the bass player can't play the bass parts because it's, you know, it's a little bit
right.
too complicated. It's like, man, I have one hand I'm playing this, man. There's no way I can chord, you know, these lines
right.
and things. So
So in that respect, in terms of overproducing, yeah, I definitely want to be mindful of that. You don't want to make the stuff so overproduced where you can't transfer it live and people can't appreciate it. I get what you're saying on that. So it's very, very important not to overproduce your record.
Right. You know, you mentioned earlier improvising. I mean, improvising off your own material, it's mm-hmm. nice, but it still has to be identifiable to the audience, too. You know what I mean? It's like, well, we know this is song ABC, but, you know, I'm going to throw this on there where it's like, man, what song is he playing? I'm waiting for it. But, yeah, you know, sometimes we'll just get caught in the mix, man, where the band members are taking it to another level. And, man, you guys are just going to Mars at that point, you know, with the
right,
compositions.
Well.
And, you know, the audience, man, everyone just, you know, jumps on and everybody's just flowing and, you know, just really having really some good composition and progressions.
Right.
And the material really helps out a lot where we have that space and creativity where we can improv.
Well, yeah. Well, I tell you what, and that's one of the things that, and I may be taking this somewhere else, but I think that's one of the challenges that all musicians or artists have to really challenge themselves and become knowledgeable of, and that is knowing your audience. Now, what you do in Atlanta, Georgia may not be the same for what you do in L.A. or Chicago. You have to know your audience. Now, if your audience is very astute where they are musically appreciated, musically inclined, and musically accepted to what you're doing, then yes, you can stretch out. Whereas if you have an audience where they're, I'm not going to say limited, but they want to hear things a certain way, then you have to pull back on the improvisation because you're going to lose them. And that's just a fact. You know,
right.
So you have to just know your audience, and all audiences are not the same. And it's almost like, put it like this, it's almost like Foreplay or the Ripperton, especially the cast that did more of the fusion. Now, when you go see Foreplay, you expect them to hear Foreplay.
Right.
Or if you hear the Ripperton or the Yellow Jacket, Yellow Jacket is going to take it outside the box, but that's the audience. They know their audience, and the audience over the years, they have come to accept what they do.
Right. They built that fan base, man, where they respect anything they do at that point, you know?
That's right. So if they want to go outside, they want to go outside all those keys and do all that superimposed stuff, then it is what it is. That's what they do. And the audience that attends and supports them, they expect that out of them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, D, what's on the musical agenda for 2011, man? We got a fresh new year started. Do we have any tours lined up or maybe a new CD in the works?
Well, I definitely have another CD that's online. It's on the timetable, I should say. I'm still promoting the current CD, Standing Room Only. But I am in negotiations on working with another record. It should be slated for the summer or the latter part of this year. I've already named it already. Rebirth of the Smooth.
Oh, nice.
Rebirth of the Smooth. And then I have a holiday record that I have on the table as well. So that's it for 2011. And since the record of Standing Ramon is doing so well, I may have just to marinate that a little bit more. But it's doing really well. But that's the plan right now, to continue to support the record and get back in studio and finish these projects up.
Man, that's hot, man. I know you've been charting on a lot of these charts and radio stations, man, with the material, man. That's just excellent, man, doing this independent.
Well, I tell you, it's a blessing, and it's very a good thing considering the economic climate that we're in with the closing of a lot of the gas stations. For me to get any type of airplay is a plus. So I'm just grateful of that. And that's definitely a contribution to the radio stations that have been very receptive to my music, as well as the music itself. The music had to be pretty decent for them to play it, so that's a good thing.
Like I always say, man, good music will always keep the industry alive. You know what I mean?
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, D, it's been a pleasure having you on my show, man. I truly appreciate you coming in and chopping it up with me, man. And, you know, you definitely got a spot here at the Producers Corner. I would love to have you back and talk about your new endeavors, man.
Well, Spud, it's always a pleasure. You can call me anytime. And I thank you, okay?
Sounds good, man. We'll keep in touch.
All right. Take care.
Have a safe one.
All right. Peace.
Bye. And a big shout out and thank you to D. Lucas for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, man, another pleasure talking to a great musician. You know, comes from a very diverse background musically, and he's able to incorporate those styles into his own compositions, you know, working with other producers of different backgrounds from R&B, neo-soul, and hip-hop. And, you know, to bring those elements to his style of smooth jazz, just phenomenal. And for more information on D. Lucas, you can hit his website up at www.dlucas.com. And that's www.dlucas.com. DLucas.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.spudtootight.com. www.spudtootight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have an iPhone, an iPod, a Mac, or a PC, open up the iTunes player, go to the iTunes store, type in the Producer's Corner, click on my image, and you have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in. So until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.